Blog Talk Radio.
But when I talk about love, I'm talking about the most difficult, the most dangerous, the most subversive force in the world.
Yeah.
Because when you're talking about love, it means you have a steadfast commitment to the well-being of others, and you're willing to do what it takes to ensure that their humanity is always affirmed.
Yeah.
Always affirmed. That's what I mean by love supreme. When John Coltrane talking about love supreme, he's just not playing the saxophone.
Yeah.
He's talking about his heart, his mind, his soul is a steadfast commitment to make sure that the well-being of all of humanity is elevated, and the best he can do is play his horn, just as the best we can do is occupy at the moment.
Hello and welcome to Radical Righteous Love. This is our blog talk conversation with Shante Brown and Charlie Arp. Shante, are you online here? Hello, Shante, are you there with me?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Ah, I heard you that. Now I hear you.
Yay.
All right.
Awesome.
Sorry, I was a little late getting signed in myself. So.
Me too. It's all right.
All right. We are here. How are you doing? It's been about 4 weeks since we tried a show.
Yes, and probably more than likely more my fault. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I'm really happy at the moment. I've had a really great weekend, and it's Halloween weekend, like my favorite holiday pretty much.
All right.
Fun. I saw all good friends. How about you? How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's been a quiet. There's not been a lot happening this weekend, which is good. Last weekend was very busy for me, so which was good too, for in its own way. But I was glad that this weekend I didn't have anything major on my schedule, so that was great. Looks like there's another person who tried to call in. I don't know who that is, and I'll. Huh. Disconnect them because it didn't look like a real phone number. All right, so this week we said we were going to talk about eco-socialism, and I sent you a couple of links to things. I don't know if you did any reading or looked into it yourself.
I haven't had a chance to really thoroughly look into it.
Okay.
But maybe we could talk about it online, on air, just like a kind of give a rundown.
That's cool. We can. Sure. And I will start to open up things. So eco-socialism, the way I understand it, is a belief that the old socialism that, you know, well, we should call it the old socialism, some people call it what happened in the Soviet Union, what happened in other countries, where sort of the state ran the economy, they didn't do much better. In fact, in some cases, they did worse than Western capitalist countries as far as environmental consequences. We all know about Chernobyl. The worst nuclear disaster was in Poland. I think that's right. It was Poland. You know, the worst, and it was under a socialist state, or at least a Communist Party state. And, of course, there are, depending on what you believe about the Soviet Union and, you know, the nations that had communist governments, some of us don't believe they really were socialist anyway. We think they were some form of capitalism or some form of something that was sort of in between the two, but not really either one. But we believe that, one of the big things for me about why I would say eco-socialism works in a way that I think capitalism can't work to address social environmental issues is because the dependence on competition, that is, each company has to outspend or out-earn all the other companies. And in that process, what I see is that they have to keep growing and they have to keep consuming. And so there's this sort of drive to constantly be expanding and consuming more. And what eco-socialists propose is that we don't, you know, that you don't have to keep growing. You don't have to keep producing bigger, better, faster, whatevers, you know, cars come to mind, or, you know, that there is, that in some ways socialism, because it, and again, this is not what they had in the Soviet Union, but what those of us who think there's another way, that's not what the Soviet Union had, but it's also not what Western capitalism had, that if the economy were democratically managed by people, you know, the majority of people, that is, if you and me and whoever else is part of a company would sit down and make deliberate decisions about that thing, where we all had sort of a say, instead of the management and the owners of the company basically having all the control, and their job just being to make a bigger profit for themselves, basically, and then, you know, pay their workers, whatever. So that sort of is what socialism is, a democratic, basically, I understand socialism to be a democratically managed economy, where there isn't like a managerial or ownership class that decides how a company is going to work, but rather it works from the bottom up a little more.
Uh-huh.
And that there's also international coordination. That's one of the big reasons that we're facing global climate change, is because every individual nation has to grow fast as the others. Like China right now, they used to not consume a lot of gasoline and petroleum products, but now as their economy has exploded in the past couple of decades, it's growing faster than any Western economy has. Although it's starting to slow down, but it was for a good decade or two growing faster than any other Western economy. They've started consuming more, you know, petroleum, more gasoline, more oil. And so now their pollution rates are worse. Their pollution, and I hear the pollution in Beijing is like the worst in the world, or one of the worst in the world. And I'm sorry for not having facts. And so, and that's because China has turned to be more capitalist. And of course, Russia has also turned to be more capitalist. And of course, they were not in a good place before the Soviet Union fell. They're not really in any better place now.
Right. And it's pretty obvious that the reason why that this hasn't been taken care of is because we depend on the cheap goods that are made, that make all this pollution. For instance, like the reason why there's so much pollution in China, because they're steady. I mean, their machine is not stopping. They're making lots of things that are sold to the rest of the world, but definitely U.S. is a big part of that market that they're making these goods for. And we're not going to be too tough on the people that are making and supplying our cheap goods. And then if the U.S. isn't saying anything, who else is going to be the one to stop that? Like, we'd be hypocrites in every sense of the word if we were going to come down on any other country about producing toxic pollution and not putting the environment first. So the countries that do that, that are responsible, are like the smallest countries that pretty much keep to themselves. They're not influential, and they're not dependent on the rest of the world for their goods.
Right, and the only way that those of us who would think of ourselves as eco-socialists can see for curbing global warming, if not reversing it, so that is for international agreements. And of course, we had international agreements, but the countries, you know, the United States never follows them, and most other major industrial powers never follow them. And so what we feel is that the socialists and eco-socialists in particular feel that we need to replace the profit-driven model of capitalism with an earth-centric model, with a people-centric model, one that doesn't focus on making a few people at the top rich, which is how capitalism works, is that, you know, people at the very top get incredibly wealthy and everybody else, you know, the 1% and the 0.1%, you know, even smaller fractions get so much more wealth than everybody else. And, you know, so we want to advocate sort of decentralizing at one level That is, there's not one tiny group of people to get the most of the wealth, but everybody shares in the wealth. And that a neighborhood, that a city, that a state, that people participate, are able to participate in the decisions that affect their lives, that are, you know, there are big incinerators put into really poor neighborhoods that turn them into toxic zones. Parts of Chicago are like that now. But if the people living in those places had a democratic power, they could have kept those factories and those incinerators out that polluted their neighborhoods. But they weren't able to because they were politically, the power was centralized or often City Hall, where the mayor made a deal with the company to give them tax breaks if he would bring more jobs, quote unquote jobs. And so that's what eco-socialism feels, that there is a political solution or at least a political strategy that we would like to see deployed against those companies, particularly the big industrial companies, the petroleum industry, the, you know, the gasoline, fossil fuel industries, to try to turn, you know, to turn their, to sort of change how they function so that they're not continuing. And of course, in Europe, we can see that Europe has a much lower overall fossil fuel consumption than the United States. We have one of the highest. And part of that is we don't have decent public transportation. You know, we don't use trains like they use in Europe, you know, things like that. So, anyway, I can probably talk a lot on that, but
how do you think that you create change in the way people see our consumption? I feel like if people's hearts were changed, and their minds would change. But I really don't think the average person thinks that it's. Like, I think they think that somebody else will solve the problem and that it's not as bad as it is.
Right.
Like, I feel like the average person is not, they don't get to see the waste site of where this stuff ends up. They don't see the dumped electronics on the shores of, you know, places that people never think about or nonetheless know the names of. We don't know where our stuff ends up. We don't see the end of the line, you know. And there's no penalty for us in a way that we see as immediate. If you're working as a farmer, maybe you see the impact of climate change, but it's not like in our face. It's some other place far away. So how do we bring that to people's attention without scaring them? Like, how do we do that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a part of it, I think they do.
Like, it's scaring a good idea.
Well, I mean, I became ecologically conscious through fear, honestly, that, of course, when I was growing up in the 70s, we had this energy crisis that occurred in, like, the early 70s where the oil-producing countries, OPEC, was called OPEC, I think they're still called OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, that was what it was. Venezuela, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, these countries that had big oil fields, all got together and decided that they wanted to make more money off of the oil they were producing. And so they started rapidly pushing the price up and embargoing against the United States in particular. And so the United States began to run out of gasoline. So there were long lines of gas stations. And so that whole era of the, you know, the OPEC embargo, but also Earth Day 1970, which I was 9 years old in 1970, and there were other, you know, ecological awareness. We began that there were commercials on TV about pollution. So we began, and of course, they always talked about how many animal species were going extinct. So there was all of a sudden this awareness that started to bubble up in the popular consciousness in the 70s. And I would say that is still there to an extent, but there has been such a backlash starting, I think, in the 80s when Ronald Reagan was elected. And in fact, it's interesting. I think when Ronald Reagan was elected, people did believe in global warming. And I think they believed, and that was the 80s, and I think in the 90s, when Bill Clinton was in office, people believed in global warming, but Bill Clinton wasn't particularly his administration didn't do a lot with it either. Neither did the Congress that he had. And, of course, he lost control of or the Democratic Party lost control of Congress. And there was just no unity in the nation, or at least he could. And I think the main reason that Bill Clinton and, of course, Barack Obama in his two administrations has not been able to do more is because the corporations at a certain point, enough powerful corporations began to fight against the idea of global warming. And they've actually, I would like to get a statistic. I don't know if I can find it, but I know I've read it, where belief in global warming rose steadily. But then at a certain point in the 2000s, it dropped. And that was about the time that the corporations began launching a massive media counterattack, arguing that it was just a theory, that it wasn't proven. And I could probably find that. But it's an interesting thing that people's belief in global warming declined. And it declined recently, because it used to be, you know, I think it was higher. More people believed in global warming in the 80s and 90s than do today. And that was because there was this shift. And I just finally found a graph on called talkingclimate.org. And it says, so in 1998, 48% of people believed in global warming. 39% were unsure, and 7% said it's not occurring. That rose to 61 by 2001.
Okay.
In 2006, it was 65% were sure that global warming had occurred. Those who were unsure dropped to 29, and those who were convinced it was not occurring were at 3%. That was the all-time low, was 2006. And, of course, that continued through 2008, but there was a slow uptick in 2008 of negative global warming people. 7% didn't believe in global warming, which was an up from 2006. And then in 2008, that same year, the people who were uncertain dipped. They dipped, and many more became sure it wasn't happening.
I gotta say, I have a problem with the term global warming. I don't think that it's accurate in describing what's happening. I just think it's super. It should be more termed climate change, because then you get into, and it, I guess for some people it's semantics. For other people, they're super technical. It just kind of depends on It depends on the factors that you're considering, but I mean, I think it's important to call it climate change, because there are different cycles that have nothing to do with humans, that are fluctuations of the sun's influence on the earth, and there's so many factors I feel like it's better to keep it broad. At the same time, it's almost, there's so many other factors. It's about us poisoning our environment. So like, if we could keep the focus on like, are we causing harm to ourselves through the way that we process our energy, the way that we process our fuels. Even people have a problem with the term fossil fuels, because they say that, I don't know if you've heard this perspective, but that it's actually, they're not, they shouldn't be called fossil fuels, because that's not really an accurate description. I just feel like if we keep it simple to, we are causing harm with the way that we are processing things, and that there is a better way, I feel like that's better than having the argument about, are humans causing harm with CO2? CO2 being demonized is also a problem, because it's actually like a natural occurring substance and is not poisonous. Another misled. I feel like it's almost purposely misleading, wrongly named and categorized problems. These are non-issues. It's not the real root of the problem.
And I also have a problem with just constantly fighting the people that want to produce this oil that they want to dig up the earth. I think that if we focused on supporting people that are providing solutions, like Tesla supposedly is giving is leading the way in having these big batteries that people can use for their homes that are working off of wind energy, and supporting companies that are doing the right thing. I feel like that's a more sustainable and righteous solution. Like, we should be making, instead of giving more attention to these companies and fighting against them, we're just going to exhaust our own resources doing that. Instead, why don't we give a light and a voice to the people that are trying to make a change and the people that do have solutions? Because there are people out there that have invented things. Like, in Japan, they have cars supposedly that went off of water. I mean, why do we not hear about this? And we can't wait for the media to do that. They obviously have their own interests at heart, which is, you know, obviously there's a lot of money to be paid and made, and the whole, supporting mainstream ideas of how we should get our energy. I think that we're losing a lot of energy fighting these people doing this. Like, they're going to win. They have the money. They have the resources. They will do whatever they can to, keep us on fossil fuels and oil because they can. Instead of us being like, okay, you know what? If you care, then you need to support these companies. If you're looking for a solution, support this person that's talking about these subjects. Like, I feel like if we shifted towards that, that would be more useful for us. Right?
Okay.
I don't know. What do you think?
So I'm going to go back just a bit to your objection to the phrase global warming. And I admit, that was a term that was used when I was growing up and for up through the 80s and 90s. And then the term climate change was suggested as a substitute. And that term has become slightly more common. But the thing, and I agree that, I'll give you a couple of things that I agree on, is that that global warming, we're not just concerned that the climate, that the earth is warming. We're not just concerned about that. We're concerned about a variety of consequences of the heavy industrial use and the cars pumping, greenhouse gases and so on into the earth. But the fact is that if you look at the science, the earth is, in fact, getting warmer and has been since the 1960s, 1970s. You look at a graph, the average planetary temperature as measured over that year, over the years, it is getting warming. So yes, talk about climate change, but don't say global warming isn't happening. It is happening. It's measurable. We can tell it's happening. But there's more to it than just that it's getting warming.
But it fluctuates, and I guess that's my point. It's not going to be steadily hot throughout the entire year of any year that they're doing the graphing for.
Right.
But also it depends on, there's multiple effects. It's not always just the warming. The warming causes the cooling in some points, which is the whole, the scare that we're trying to avoid, avoiding running into an ice age. Because just as in the body, when you have a fever, then you will get chills. It's a very similar kind of, it's a cooling system. The earth is a perfect system, therefore it auto-corrects itself to create balance. And we are creating imbalance, which is basically the way that that's the term that feels more real to me. It says disease.
Yeah.
It's not disease this, disease that. It's imbalance. It's the root of the problem.
Right.
And, go ahead.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree that climate change is happening on a broader scale than just the fact that the earth is warming. But the fact is the earth is warming. There are years it dips, but then it comes back up, and it never goes as low as it did. The lowest point was in the 1950s. We have not returned to the coldest point in the 1950s since the 1980s, which is when it really began to head up and away into territory that it's never been at before. And so if we can study going back to 1880, we have very good records to 1880. And so all I'm saying is, I'm just saying global warming is part of the problem, but it is an indicator of what's going on. Sort of like you said, taking the temperature of a body. Yes, the body will go up and down a little bit when you're sick.
Right.
You know, but the earth is getting warmer, and it's not reversing itself. It dips, but it never goes back to where it was. If the earth had a simple body temperature that it was always supposed to be at, that would be easy. But anyway, we're not going to argue.
Yeah.
I think we're both just going to agree to a little bit to disagree on this point. I think that global warming is actually an accurate term if you look at the statistics.
My only reason for saying that is I think it's important to be super clear, because what happens is the people that don't believe in it will catch one little piece that might not fit that, and then they say, aha, see, this is wrong. It's not global. So that's the only reason why I say it's important that we be careful with the wording.
Everybody and I believe that, I agree, it's climate change and global warming. I believe both are, in fact, happening.
Right.
But we'll not spend a lot. Right, they're both happening.
Right.
But, so I'm not going to, I think we understand each other. We just maybe slightly disagree on whether the term is useful. Let's see. And there were some other things you said in there about, like, supporting different companies and boycotting others. And I don't know if you use the word boycott, but I was hearing.
I believe in supporting rather than fighting, like with working with activism.
Yeah.
I just found it to be more useful and more building to support the people that are doing the things that you believe in, and supporting the causes that are happening already, and or the scientists or the people that you feel like are giving the message that you agree with, rather than fighting all the time the people that are saying the wrong things or the companies that are doing that. Okay, well, who are you supporting?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, let's support those people. Let's give a voice to the media that are talking about the things that are important to the people. Let's talk about the companies that are trying to find alternative fuel solutions.
Right.
So that's all I was saying.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm trying to, because I don't disagree with the idea of, at some level, trying to find corporations and companies that are trying to be green, that are trying to create green products and green, alternatives. The thing for me, one of the big things, is I think we should abolish the automobile. I think we should replace it with solar and electric and public transportation systems that are much more healthy. You know, the one we currently have here in the city of Chicago, it takes almost twice as long to get anywhere on public transit as it does to drive a car. And, of course, you can ride a bike, but And the bike is usually a little faster than public transit. Not always, depends on how far you're going. But I have found that to be true as I've ridden my bike more often. Sometimes I get places much faster than public, not as fast as a car. But, I feel like that if I believe that transportation is one of the biggest users, creators of this problem of, climate warming. And, of course, we haven't moved. We're kind of staying on the climate issue, in part because it seems to be the big one. But, there's also the fact that it is. It's a huge one. There's also the fact that there are
everything. It's everything. It's literally
it
everything.
It's everything.
It blows,
everything lives within this climate.
It blows my mind how little it's talked about and how little the environment is considered in, all debates happening. It blows my mind. Nothing else matters. I don't think that there would ever be a, for instance, if you did a news broadcast on a major show or a major station, they wouldn't let something major that happened, go by, say, Oprah died or something like that. They wouldn't, like, not report that and, like, you know, that would be, like, a huge
right.
story. But yet Mother Earth, like, literally, like, being too hot or too cold for us to live on it is, like, not a non-issue. Or, like, our oceans
right.
being too acidic for us to be able
right.
to, like, get fish from them. Or, but, like, the whales dying because they have, like, you know, pieces of plastic in their stomach, like, no big deal, no
yeah.
big deal. Like, that to me is very backwards, and it really says a lot.
Yeah.
It blows my mind. It's a huge
and
issue,
yeah.
yeah,
and so it is. And so, but I mean, but there's also, you kind of started to touch on it, like the whales, that their lives are threatened, that there are species that die, that go extinct every day. You know,
yeah.
that's another element of climate change. And, of course, that's driven by some of the same systems that drive, you know, continued fossil fuel. I know you earlier said something about where fossil fuel is not totally accurate. And language is a funny thing, you know, but we all know kind of what we're talking about. We say fossil
right,
fuel.
Right.
We're talking about the gasoline.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about the gasoline that we put in our cars, talking about which
yeah.
the trucks use to get around. And, of course, trains use a version. They use diesel or whatever. You know, all of course, trains could be turned into electric. In fact, we have a big electric system here in Chicago, and we could put more trains on electric. Of course, electric is nuclear. That's a whole other thing. We haven't talked about nuclear, but, you know, eventually I think that we will have to get rid of nuclear because nuclear just has too many negative side effects. And so I'm kind of excited to talk about a positive thing. I'm kind of excited by the breakthroughs in solar panel technology. I really believe that in a decade we'll have solar panels that can, in fact, do everything that normal coal and nuclear have done to this point as far as electricity generation. So, you know, I think we're only a decade away from not needing those kind of power plants anymore, that we can do it all with solar, or at least a significant chunk of it with solar. So, anyhow, that's
yeah.
me. That's one of my – and, yes, I think, you know, we should invest money in those things. I guess where
yeah.
I get – where the socialism – because we are talking about are there socialist
yeah.
strategies – And what socialism has always said is that capitalism is a worldwide system, and you need a worldwide system. You can't just, you know, have socialism in one country, you know, like the Soviet Union, and figure that, you know, because the Soviet Union still had to come, if they exported anything, they had to compete with other capitalist countries. And to import anything, they had to somehow pay for their import. So they were not totally outside the system. And so to fight the system worldwide, you know, we need to have partners, you know, the United States needs to have people in the United States who are conscious, right, who are wanting
yes.
to defend the earth, need to partner with people in Europe and people in China and people in, you know, everywhere, and to make an international network that fights on a international scale. Because, I mean, we can make our little, you know, we could have better public transit in Chicago, but if it's not happening around the world, and, you know, most places still have inadequate public transit, we're, you know, we're still not solving the problem. Anyway.
Yeah. And it's all about solving the
so
problem.
So I went on
like
a little bit there.
That's literally, like, what I feel like our government should be like, that should be their job, like solving the problem of, like, how can people get the needs that they have fulfilled in a way that is outside of their own means. They're just like, this should
right.
only be a vehicle for that to be accomplished. And if that were true, then we would have major support for these alternative fuels and these alternative means of getting energy. And obviously
right.
there wouldn't be homeless and starving people also. But because we have more than enough of everything that we need. We just have mismanaged resources. What was it?
Right.
We were talking about something a little bit. I wanted to back up.
Okay.
As far as just like I wanna talk solutions. That's the
right.
There's so many problems. I just feel like it's a waste of time to talk about problems. I want to talk about a solution.
Right.
I was trying to. I guess I lost. What we were talking about something a little bit before.
Was it maybe?
It will hit me later when we're off there.
All right.
Oh, it's 9:01.
We'll think about
it.
What is the solution? Well, is there a solution that you are excited about, or that you come across something that gives you hope that we might actually be able to, you know, reverse or the damage to the earth?
Well, I think that we have definitely solutions. There's somebody that, I don't know if you've ever talked about the Venus Project or if you've come across that, but it's
what was
a
that?
Project that is based off a resource economic system, a resource-based economic system. This brilliant man, Jacques Fresco, he and his partners have been working on this project called the Venus Project since the 70s, from what I understand. And he's an architect that works in kind of a futuristic way. He was one of the few people that were coming up with this idea of harnessing the power of geothermal energy in the 70s.
Okay.
And they're just now starting to implement some of the ideas he had. He has this idea that we should have a resource-based economy where, how do I put this? So a lot of the tasks that we have to do as humans to have our lifestyles work, for instance, having the garbage taken and cleaning things. He says everything should be automated, like these sort of tasks, like cleaning and collecting things, should be automated because that's the direction that humanity is headed anyway. And a lot of jobs are going to be obsolete in the future, so we might as well, like, nip that in the bud and orient our lives in a different way so that we have all these menial tasks taken care of by machines, therefore freeing up our time to do what we're really here to do, which is like be humans with our fullest potential and sharing our gifts and learning. And he builds these very futuristic, he's very Buckminster Fuller sort of kind of guy, like super brilliant. He designs
right.
All kinds of buildings and houses, and he designs cities that are like these living, breathing buildings. Jacques Fresco is his name. You should look him up, the Venus Project. And they actually have a sample of his ideas in this place, Venus, Florida, that people come to visit. And the idea is that nobody owns resources, no companies are owning or selling resources. They belong to the bigger entity or state or country, and that those resources are found out how much they have of them. Like they find out the statistics of how much they have of each resource that all the people need. It's constantly monitored.
Right.
Then you make rational decisions on how much you can use at any given point to maintain equilibrium for the society as a whole first before you can distribute anything. But you have to make sure that it is actually like there's enough and that what else? There's so many big concepts with his work. It's kind of hard to simmer down into like a couple of sentences. But I don't know if I'm painting the picture for you well enough, but highly recommend to check his stuff out. It's called The Venus Project.
Okay.
His name is Jacques Fresco. Interesting concept. I know machines and robots running things is a little bit scary to me. However, it does make sense that we're not going to go backwards. As much of a primitivist as I am, I know that once we know how to use scissors, we're not going to be like, oh, nope, well, those were made with a machine. Not going to use those. Like, we're going to use the good things, the good technology that we come across. We just need to use it for good.
Right.
And the idea of keeping track of our resources, how much resources we have, is a good idea too, because we're just kind of like running. We're just going to keep going until we run out of shit. Like, that doesn't really make a lot of sense to me,
right.
regardless of what happens. And the other things that are inspiring to me is, of course, permaculture, sustainable agriculture. The way that we produce, which is weird, like produce, sounds like a machine, but producing our food, meaning meat and vegetables, fruit, it's not sustainable, and we basically are ruining our soil and pumping it full of artificial fertilizers, and we're killing our bees and other pollinating insects, and it's crazy. Like, it's suicidal.
Right.
So that needs to be addressed. I think that a lot of these things should be illegal. If I'm killing somebody else or poisoning somebody else, like my neighbor or you, I would go to jail, go to prison, and I would get fined.
Right.
But if I'm doing it to lots of people and I'm a corporation that has the same rights as a person, somehow that is totally okay. And in fact, very profitable.
Right.
That is very backwards. So I guess if I were to fight a fight, it would be that is allowed in the first place, because it'd be very easy to prove that it's causing harm.
Right.
It'd just be hard to go up against these major corporations, and we'd have to completely change the way that we live our lives.
Right. Yeah.
But we won't be able to even change our lives if we're all dead. So.
Of course. Well, something that we're right at 44 minutes. So we started a little bit late, but because of the way the show is scheduled, we can't really go past 9 o'clock. But I did want to kind of say, I did find the Jock Frescoes. It's thevenusproject.com.
Yes.
I like to look up on this, and what's interesting to me about the environmental movement in general is that it's so diverse, meaning that what I mean is that there are environmental organizations and various different, I guess maybe even a word you would probably like, it's entrepreneurial. People start their project and they work on it, and they start a company. Some people, like my son, works for a meat substitute company because he's vegetarian, and so it's a company called Upton's Naturals who creates, you know, meat substitutes. And, you know, there are, and of course you have, you know, people start an organic grocery store or whatever. And of course we know about Whole Foods, which it's a mixed blessing, but at least there seems to me that everywhere I turn, many people are concerned and many people are trying lots of different local solutions. And I think those are good. And of course, Jock Fresco is trying to think bigger than that. And of course, the eco-socialists are also trying to think bigger. They, you know, I don't know what an eco-socialist would think about Jock Fresco, because I have just now started looking at it. Of course, you know, what eco-socialists think about when they think about these individual solutions for us, one of the central things is changing how we do business. And Fresco talks about he would abolish money. If he were running the world, he would abolish money. He thinks money is a bad way to actually measure resource usage. And of course, socialists totally agree with him. That's that, you know, money doesn't actually measure the right things. It measures how many hours you put in at the office and how much stuff you can buy with the hours that you put in at the office. But it doesn't really measure what kind of damage what you're buying is doing to the earth, you know, and what kind of health effects there is from, you know, driving your car, you know, so that money doesn't work because it doesn't measure the right things that we really need. So, you know, I can see that I agree with abolishing money. I saw that on the Venus Project site, totally there. Nearly every socialist I know believes that sooner or later, if we're really going to give the people the control of the economy, we're going to get rid of money, because money distorts what's actually the value of the resources and labor that is being used and the products that are being exchanged. So we do agree on that part of it. Let's see. So now, I don't know, do you have any like last words you want to say on the environment or ecology before we wrap up? Because we should probably talk about what we want to do in 2 weeks from now. You know, is there I have a topic. Do you remember the topic that I sent you about my friend? Do we want to talk about that a little bit? Yeah. So we can Do you remember that one?
Do we want to talk about it? Yeah, I mean, sure. We can. We were going to talk about the effect of religion on sexuality.
I think
that it's interesting. I'd be very interested to hear different opinions about it. I'd like to open up the lines to hear people's experiences if it was possible. But also, I feel like sexuality is very broad, too. So maybe even talk about... break it down as much as possible. It would be hard to get it all in within an hour or two.
Well, I have a friend that I actually interviewed for, there was that, I think when you were in France, her name is Dana. I interviewed her and she talked about domestic violence and her experience in an abusive relationship. And of course she was raised fundamentalist Baptist and, has, you know, spent her 20s and 30s trying to, you know, break free of what she feels were negative bondages that were put on her by her religious upbringing. And she proposed this topic to me in a private message, and I said, sure. You know, she wants to talk about Christianity, sexuality, and particularly how it affects young women as they're growing up and trying to figure out what the world is about, what sex is all about, or, you know, and men or not, if you're not interested in men, you know. So I think you two probably have some overlaps in your childhoods and growing up, because I know you were raised in a strict religious background, as was I.
Yeah.
I can give the male point of view on all that stuff, because I find it somewhat toxic too. So anyway, that will probably be our next thing in 2 weeks. We'll be on Christianity and sex. And I'll make sure that Dana can join us, at least Dana. So there'll be three of us, and then we'll try to figure out how to get people to talk, you know, to join us by calling in. So,
and or maybe they can
share
some things too.
We want to hear from everyone who obviously we can't do a lot. Can't do more than an hour. I've decided that the show works better as an hour than we used to do, like 90 minutes or 2 hours, and I just decided that too much. 1 hour every 2 weeks is nice and manageable. We get what we want to get done. And get sort of get practice at doing this show, and maybe someday we'll hit the big time.
I agree. Right. And if you're asking for last words, I would just say, it's as far as the subject we were talking about today, it's just a matter of people just seeing what they can do in their own personal lives and simplifying. If you know you're going to go out to eat, you know, bring something you can bring to go stuff in, like thinking about where your stuff comes from, where if you're buying clothing, if it's a major label, like finding out where are they stationed? Like, where are their workers? How much do workers get paid? Like, you know, figuring out the connection between things. We're just so far removed. It's, I think the thing that makes it easy for people to just neglect the effect of what we're doing on this end and how it affects the rest of the world.
Right. And to me, there's a lot of things I could say about environmental awareness. And, you know, we talked a little bit about Christianity messing up sexuality. I also believe that some forms, and I don't want to condemn all Christians, because I know Christians who are environmentalists, but there are a lot of Christians who are not. In fact, most people who don't believe in climate change or global warming tend to be Christians who are listening to Fox News and, you know, sort of the propaganda that tries to say, oh, we don't need to do anything to stop the rising, you know, the fact that summers are getting warmer and winters are getting warmer. And, you know, we don't need to stop all that. We just, it's natural. It just happens. And so, because as I was growing up as a Christian, in the 70s, it's a kind of a funny thing. In the 70s, we believed the world was coming to an end and that Jesus was going to come back. And I think you may have heard some of that stuff when you were growing up, but that's what we were taught. And because the 70s was very traumatic, or the 60s and the 70s were very traumatic for the United States, because you had John F. Kennedy was shot in 63, Malcolm X was shot in 65, Martin Luther King in 68, and the country was in Vietnam War, and the young men rebelled against the Vietnam War, the college-age young men around the world, or college-age, draft-age young men, rebelled against that war in the United States. And it was a big shock, because the authority state and its ability to go war and the rightness of fighting communism had never been questioned on that massive of a scale. And that sort of shock to the system panicked a lot of people. A lot of people thought the end of the world was coming because it was rebellion or whatever. And so climate change, oddly enough, or global warming, climate change, it all fit in to this end of the world fear that was going on in the 70s. Well, of course, the 70s and then the 80s and then the 90s came along and people stopped being afraid. I think even Christians who believed that Jesus could come back at any minute, you know, sort of began to realize that he may not be coming back just yet. And so where was I going with that? I guess I'm going with this idea that there is a version of Christianity out there that says we don't need to care about the planet. That, you know, in fact, it's all the spirit and heaven. We all want to go to heaven. We want to all want to get, you know, we want to, this world should just come to an end, and the new heaven and new earth should come tomorrow. And I think you and I, coming out of different versions of that idea, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses have a very different view than Pentecostals do, but there's a certain similarity in that this earth isn't important, or this, you know, the current system is so corrupt, it's so evil that we just want God to come in and take over and fix our problems for us.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think, you know, and religion is very comforting. And I think the reason
it's all about the past or the future. Like, it's all about the, like, past, like before you were ever born, before your mom was ever born, before anyone you know was ever born, and like the future, like before, like after you, like you're gonna die and like come back. So it's not about the now. It's not about the present moment at all.
Right.
And what you can do to improve
it. And it's not
a, you're just screwed.
Yeah, and I mean, we're taught that our physical bodies are not spiritual, that they're disconnected from spirit, that the Holy Spirit has to come into them, or at least these are kind of things I was taught, that your human reason and your physical body were not divine in the right way, you know, that you were a sinner, you had to, you know, repent of your lusts, and you had to repent of, but yet I believe that part of an ecological consciousness is saying, yes, I'm a physical being, I belong to this planet, you know, Mother Earth is my mother, you know, and I think that there are Christians who do think differently about environmental issues, and I hope that their view of, you know, Christianity that is an earth-loving Christianity would get bigger, because there's a lot of Christians, and if we don't win some of the Christians over to environmentalism, we're going to lose in the long run, because we need to win, you know. So anyhow, just some of my thoughts sort of stringing together religion and environment.
Yeah.
Well, and we're getting, okay, we're right at a couple of minutes before we go. So come back in 2 weeks. I'll come up with a fancy name. I almost said a sexy name, but I'll come up with a fancy name for our next episode, which will be on religion and sex. And we'll post that on the internet. And anyway, 2 minutes, 3 minutes to go. Anything else you want to get in here, edgewise? Any word you want to say?
I was really excited about Halloween this week. So,
yeah.
You know, obviously, yeah. This time is to be honoring the cycle, the change of cycle of life of the, you know, the
right.
last of the harvest and the changing of
yeah.
the seasons and honoring our past and the death in a
right.
sacred way, honoring that the cycle of life and that meaning out with the old means also bringing in the new, but we have to be patient for that and go through, you know, the hard times, the winter, the cold times, the non-harvest,
yes.
And prepare ourselves for it in order to come out on
yeah.
the other side in the spring. So, I don't know, that's something that is nice to be reminded of and just thinking of it in a bigger
right.
way than just our own, oh, it's cold right now, or oh, it sucks. We want to
yeah.
have, you know, fresh fruit for a while. Like, it's a necessary process, and we have to honor that.
Yes.
At least that's my
right.
my viewing of it.
Yeah, and I mean, I had fun. My son and daughter-in-law and granddaughter were at the mall yesterday, and you know, they had and it was kind of fun to hang out with them. But she's 3.5, so she's just barely starting to understand Halloween. But it's interesting that I have members of my family who like Halloween is an evil holiday. And I'm like, but death and fear, those are like real things. Why not have a holiday where we sort of can laugh at our fear, but also remember the dead, the people who have lived before us. I mean, it was actually called All Saints and All Souls. Today was All Saints Day, tomorrow's All Souls Day. So totally with you and remembering who's came before us and, you know.
Likewise.
All right, well, it's been fun, and we got about 10 seconds here before it cuts us off. We'll see you, I'll speak with you in 2 weeks, and I'll set up a new event. All right.
All right. Thanks, Charlie. Have a good night.
All right, have a good night.
Peace.